Permaglow from the city lights makes it brighter than the three men like. They were hoping for darkness, but all they get is a neon twilight. One holds a briefcase and a photocopy of a fax. One a flashlight. One two shovels taped neatly together. They should not be here, and they are nervous. This is not at all how they imagined it would be, but that's the way it is. The one with the briefcase is smarter than his colleagues, and he understands. Nothing is ever quite as we imagine it. They have travelled a long way. Being here scares them. The thought of what they're about to do scares them even more. But neither of these things scares them as much as the man who has hired them to do this job. Two of them have never met this man. They have only heard stories about him. They are not the kind of stories they would want to tell their kids. The stories work on their minds even now as they search, fueling them with a determination they have never felt before. They are riding emotional rapids on a flimsy raft, and the raft has a name. It is called Fear of Failure. The beam of the flashlight strikes a gravestone, sweeps away the darkness as if it is a layer of ancient dust. Engraved words appear. A loved one, long dead. It's the wrong one. They move on across the flat ground, past a clump of trees and a small landscaped mound. Another headstone, also the wrong one. They stop, consult the blurred facts. They look around them, see marble obelisks, onyx cherubs, granite slabs, porphyry urns, chiseled endearments, quotations, poems. But these men are not readers of poetry. The words do not reach out through the darkness to them. "We're in the wrong line, you assholes. Next line along. Look, it shows you clearly. You have to count three lines. We only counted two." They find the right line. Find the right gravestone. Hannah Catherine Rosewell, 1892 to 1993. Dearly beloved wife and mother. The man checks the facts, reading the fuzzy words with difficulty, then studies the inscription on the headstone once more. He is being methodical. Finally, he nods assent. Carefully, the other two cut the turf and roll it back as if it were a carpet. Then they start digging. The man with the facts watches, listens to the crunch of the blades, the traffic on sunset beyond the locked wrought iron gates, watches for shadows that move, for a shape that was not there last time he looked. It is a warm night and the soil is dry. It has the texture of calcium, of old bones that have gone beyond brittle and crumbled. A shovel pings as it strikes a stone, and an oath hisses through the humid darkness. After a while, the men pause to drink from a canteen of water. They work for almost 3 hours before the lid of the coffin is fully exposed. It's in good shape. There's still a gleam from the varnish, rosewood. This is a deluxe. A tree in a rainforest has given its life for this coffin. The two men standing on the lid lay their shovels on the ground, then stretch their backs. Each is handed a nylon cord with a shackle, which they clip to the end handles. Then they haul themselves up out of the grave and stretch their backs again, gratefully. One licks a blister on his hand, then binds a handkerchief around his palm. Even with all three working, it takes several minutes of clumsy, painful effort to haul the coffin up and onto the ground. But finally they succeed, and the one with a bandaged hand sits on it, momentarily exhausted by the effort. They drink more water, all three peering anxiously into the night around them. A small rodent scurries past and is absorbed by the darkness. Now they have the coffin out. The urgency with which they have been working has deserted them. They stand back from it for some moments, looking at the brass handles, looking at each other, each thinking their own private thoughts about how a corpse might look after 3 years underground. They go to work on the screws, remove each of them and pocket them carefully. Then they hesitate. The two who have dug the grave grip the lid and try to free it, but it's stuck tight. They try a little harder, and there's a crack like a gunshot as the seal gives and the lid raises a few inches at one end. Instantly, they drop it again and stagger away.
"Yuck! Jesus!"
says the one with the bandaged hand. The smell. Nothing has prepared them for this smell. It's as if a septic tank has been vented beneath them. They move further away, but the smell is everywhere. The whole night is thick with it. The one with the torch gags, then swallows back down a throatful of vomit. They shuffle further away still. Finally, the smell recedes enough for them to be able to move back towards the coffin. This time they prepare themselves, taking deep breaths before they heave that lid up and off.